If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You want to be, again, look for folks and groups that are patient and disciplined. They're not of the mindset of, you know, get rich quick. They're playing the long game.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mark is the co-founder of SMK Capital Management, a boutique family-owned real estate investment firm. He's been an avid real estate investor for over 15 years and has sourced, underwritten, acquired, raised capital, renovated, managed, and sold both residential and commercial real estate investments throughout multiple markets in the U.S. Mark and SMK currently have active investments in over 40 commercial real estate deals, which includes over 120 properties nationwide. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. Great to be here.
Man, this is awesome. You've had your hands in all kinds of different real estate all across the country. And so I think it's really exciting to have you on so we can obviously learn from you. If you can kind of give us an idea of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
Sure. Yes. Yeah, I'm happy to share a little more on our background here. I started in financial analysis, working in corporate America. Moved over to operations, and you know, those two just meshed well with real estate investing. Started investing on the side, you know, personally, then with family, with partnering with some family and friends, and you know, grew up to create our firm about 10, 11 years ago, 2009, 2010, post-recession. And at the time, Sam, we were really just focused on, you know, the distress that was in the market. We could buy stuff at 40, 50, 60% off just a couple of years prior valuations. And so really just capitalizing on what we saw to be great opportunities, primarily in single family and small multifamily investments. Along the way, I just personally had a 401k that I kind of left idle for a while after leaving corporate America. I decided to open up a self-directed IRA account. And then I needed to invest that capital, to other asset classes with other people that I wasn't necessarily in control of and would allow me to diversify, right? And so started doing that. And it's probably about 8, 9, 10 years ago now. Myself and some family members would invest passively into syndications, right? First one was mobile home parks, then self-storage, and then an oil fund. And like kind of list went on. We tried a lot of stuff. We've just basically always had the vision of being active with some capital and passive with some capital, and evolving as the markets continue to evolve. And so today we actually don't do much residential at all anymore.
Sure.
And we focus strictly on more, what I would say, recession-resistant, commercial, institutional quality real estate.
Now, is that real estate that you guys are more active in, or like you were saying, is it more of a passive investment approach?
Yeah, so we've actually evolved, I guess, organically, never really projecting to be where we are today, but we've evolved to be a real estate private equity firm.
Okay.
So we analyze a ton of deals and we partner with sponsors and operating partners and provide a portion of the equity and become part owners in the deal.
Right. Okay. That's fantastic. How do you structure most of those? Is this the fund of funds model? Is it you general partners, or how are you kind of structuring those deals?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, Sam. Just depends on the operating partner, their people, you know, maybe their need for capital or their lack of need for capital. Both have pros and cons. A lot of times you have your typical preferred return with a split above the pref. So, you know, we always put our investors' interest first, making sure that we as a capital firm are really profiting after and really just incentivized to pick the best deals time and time again.
Right. Now, that's fascinating. You made a comment about the operating partners that have a lack of a need of capital. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, we're in a world today, Sam, post-Jobs Act, where you can go online and you can find investments in 5 minutes, right?
Sure.
There's too many.
Sure.
And so you have to ask yourself, what are these firms doing online raising capital? Why are they paying for capital and for investors? And there's plenty of good reasons to do that.
Right.
But not everyone's doing it. And sure. A lot of firms don't have the need to go out and you know, solicit per se for capital. And some of those firms have a very strong, stellar track record. They're patient, they're disciplined. And when they get a good deal, they literally have enough capital waiting for it. And so that's kind of what I meant by they may not need capital. It doesn't necessarily mean that you should only invest with one or the other, but it's good to look at both.
Right. So what do you bring to the table then with those investors if it's not capital?
Well, we bring capital, but we also bring access to the deal. And so a lot of times we'll get, you know, a little bit of a heads up before it fills up, or we will sometimes be able to get preferential treatment, performance, better terms, et cetera, lower fees, whatever it might be, because of our relationship.
Right. When it comes to selecting your operating partners, obviously you guys have been in this a long time. You've developed a deep bench, I'm sure, of industry contacts, but have you guys changed? I guess I'm gonna ask several questions here and you can take it where you want.
Sure.
Have you changed like what you're investing in here this year? Have you kind of seen some operating partners, you know, strategy change? You say, we're not investing in that. Or I guess, tell me, you know, how you vet your industry partners and, you know, kind of what that process looks like for you guys.
Yeah, I'll start with that, Sam. We vet patiently, number one. It takes a long time. I always say this, it takes longer to choose the right people than it does the right property.
Right.
And so we test them a lot of times with our own money first. And we see what it's like to work with them. Let's be real. You can paint rosy picture and answer all the questions correctly. But when you're invested with somebody for 5-10 years, you know, you're hearing from them regularly. You get to know them quite well. How do they react when there's a hurdle along the way? What is their efficiency to be able to pivot if need be? Are they always looking out for investors' best interests? So answering all those questions just takes time, Sam, right?
Right. And so, you know, waiting 5 to 10 years to see if a deal goes through, say you put $500,000 with an investor and you say, okay, I'm just making numbers up, you know, waiting for that deal to go full cycle. I mean, you can't necessarily vet someone every 5 to 10 years. That's a long time to vet somebody. You know,
sure.
You'd be waiting a long time to find the right roster of guys you can ever put money with. So how does that work? How do you shorten that and that vetting process?
Yeah, there's steps along the way that you can better align yourself with the right people. We have been doing it for over 10 years personally. So the majority of investments that we bring to our group, we have that 5+ year track record with. Not all of them, but some of them we do. And so that helps. We've vetted through trial and error, right? Investing and testing. But you can, you know, you want to be, again, look for folks and groups that are patient and disciplined. They're not of the mindset of, you know, get rich quick. They're playing the long game. They're conservative with their underwriting. They overly communicate and provide a lot of transparency. You know, let's just pause at that right there. That's a pretty high bar to set in itself. If you find all those characteristics of a group and a firm and folks, it's a really good place to be involved with, especially if they've been across multiple market cycles, you know, been in business for, let's just say, decades and have a lot of experience on the ups and the downs. That really is the best way to position yourself.
Right. That's fascinating. Moving on from the partners and more into the capital raising side. Starting out, I guess, from then until now, what are some things you've done right and some things you've done wrong on the capital raise side that would kind of make it easier for our investors to go out, or our listeners rather, to go out and raise capital on their own?
It's hard, Sam. You got to balance, you know, for what we do. We manage all of our own investors' capital in-house, right? And so that
sure.
is a task in itself. But you have to balance, you know, essentially capital raising side with deal sourcing, partner building, vetting, analysis, you know, knowing the trends in the industry, where to position capital today, what things are looking like going forward. And obviously, you know, coming off 2020, there's been so much change. It's you got to love it. I'm telling you right now, if you don't love it and it's just something you might dip your toe in, it's probably not going to work. And so be very passionate, love it, and be sincere, be honest with folks, show them the pros and cons. Don't just paint rosy picture of what's going to happen. That's just not the right way to do things.
Right. And when it comes to this year, how has your strategy shifted, if any? How has it shifted in 2020?
So we actually made a pretty big shift. I'd say 2017, 2018-ish, we stopped really investing in single family. We had already been kind of reducing our single family investments and increasing our commercial. But we positioned, we created a recession-resistant fund, Sam. We kind of saw that there was going to be, or potentially there's a high likelihood of a market correction.
Sure.
And we started investing, really just focusing. We'd already been investing in certain asset classes, but focusing on them that were historically more resilient during downturns. So mobile home parks, workforce apartments in growth markets, and some self-storage as well. And so for the last few years, that's been our primary focus. It still is today. I'll say that, you know, through the pandemic, we've just become even more conservative. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I look at projections pretty closely and how they're being derived. And listen, if you've got a bunch of financials that are hard to really understand if they're going to meet them, you might want to pause, right? We're at an all-time high in asset pricing right now. And it's not a time to be overly zealous. I think for me, I always ask myself the question after looking at a deal, do I think this deal has a high likelihood of overperforming or beating the projections? And if the answer is yes, I'll be pretty excited about it.
Right. And so are you seeing, because obviously you see a lot of deals come across your desk, are you seeing projections being put out there that you find are unrealistic?
Yeah, all the time.
Really? So like, yeah. Walk us through, and I mean, not no one's surprised, but I mean, at the same time, you know, if you've already got a deep bench of people say, hey, I know and trust and like what these guys do, but yet you're seeing some new deals come across your desk from other operators, like, you know, how does the ordinary person look at this and say, oh man, that's nonsense? Or sure. Do you just have to have industry experience that says, man, these numbers are just unattainable?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, Sam. Some metrics I just will share with folks that they can look at and learn quickly to what to look at. Like for today, you want to look at occupancy, projected occupancy, right? And so COVID has disrupted occupancy across many asset classes, not sure. All, but many. Sure. And so if you think things are just going to trail along as they have been pre-COVID, that might be a little overly zealous. Rent growth, same concept. A lot of rent growth has stopped. Some asset classes are declining in rent growth.
Right.
Most operating partners don't build in declining rent growth into their performance.
So right.
Let's start with that. You know, you want to run sensitivity, right? If things go down, how much lower is your overall return potentially going to be versus just looking at that, you know, pie in the sky, high projected, you know, return. Cap rates is another one, Sam. We were at all-time low of interest rates. Many asset classes have seen, you know, declining cap rates significantly in mobile home park space. And when that happens, you have a reduced margin, right? You're just working with a little less cash flow because you're paying more for the property. And
right.
So you have to be able to look and say, look, although that may continue, let's project and assume that cap rates are going to go up and that interest rates are going to go up. Now, what does our return look like? And so those are some of the metrics that people can look at and analyze to see if there's a little too much fluff built in.
Right. No, that's absolutely great advice. When it comes to the number of deals that come across your desk or the number of ones that fit your criteria, do you have any idea what that is?
Yeah, I'll say historically, we look at about 10 to 20 deals a month, and we invest in about 4 to 10 a year.
Wow. Okay. So 200 out of 240, you're investing in anywhere from, you said, 4 to 10 a year?
Yeah, give or take.
Wow. Okay. So that's a pretty low number. That's great. So you definitely vet your deals very, very closely. That's awesome. When it comes to your team, now that's something you guys have probably had to build and find the right key people in the key seats. So when it came to building out your team, because obviously you guys kind of just did this all organically and just kind of the way it worked out for you, what were some of the things you learned along the way in that regard? And then how did you build those positions within your company?
Yeah, so, you know, really our team internally is a bookkeeper, an assistant, a CPA, and then I have some strategic partners that assist with, if we're going to raise a fund of funds, fund management, oversight, et cetera. But at the operational level and the asset level, Sam, it's all about our operating partners and our sponsors.
Sure.
So they execute on the plan. And that's really, you know, the strength and core of this business is the people that are on the ground day in and day out. And so those teams have evolved over the years, Sam, again, by doing a lot of, honestly, it's referral based mostly. So most of our operating partners over the years have came to us because they were referred to us from other investors that have done well with them and have high praise and you know, of a pedigree that we're looking for.
Right.
And so then we'll test and invest, and then we get comfortable, and then we kind of pass that relationship on to our investor group as well.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Mark, let's jump into the final four. Sure. If you were to take everything you know and distill it down to one piece of advice for an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Gosh, I'd say we're in the people business. Okay, so people first. You can have the best property in the best part of town, but if you got the wrong people, it's not going to work. So make sure you align yourselves with the right people first.
That's awesome. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm consistently reading, Sam, constantly trends in the industry, different asset classes, the economy. We're in a time of volatility, and so you can't just rest back on your laurels. You got to try and be one step ahead.
Right. That's fantastic. And when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Try to protect investors' interests always. I think there's a lot of noise out there, Sam. And so just being a good steward of our investors' capital and ensuring their financial freedom and continued prosperity is really important to us.
Right, right. Yeah, you certainly can't build a business like yours losing money. That's absolutely fantastic. When it comes to getting in touch with you, Mark, what's the best way for our listeners to reach out to you?
Sure. You can go to our website. Our company name is SMK Capital Management, and our website is smkcap.com. We've got a lot of information, resources there, and then you can reach out directly to me right through the website as well.
That's awesome. Mark, thanks so much for your time. Do appreciate you coming on board with us today.
My pleasure, Sam. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.